Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good Wednesday to everybody. Great to be with you. And we'll roll through today together and get to Penn State basketball tonight. And the Nittany Lions will face one of the top five teams in the country tonight. They'll take on Wisconsin at the Jordan Center. I'm at the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Penn State will play Wisconsin tonight, a team that was in the Final Four last year and only lost one player off that team, Ben Brust. Brust did give them a very good outside threat, a consistent outside threat. But they've been able to replace that. The one thing they didn't count on, and no team really counts on this, guys getting hurt. And Trey Jackson, who played against Penn State the first time, then broke a bone in his foot in a loss at Rutgers, the only Big Ten loss they've had, which, by the way, Frank Kaminsky did not play because he had a concussion. And Trey Jackson will not play in tonight's game against Penn State. But Bronson Canning has taken over at that point guard spot. And he's actually averaged 12 points a game since taking over. He's done really well. The difference is there's a domino. You could say, well, look at the great job Canning has done. And they're just fine without Trey Jackson. No, the domino was who comes off the bench to replace Koenig? That's Zach Showalter. And the drop-off is certainly there. And that's what people never realize. I remember one time the Red Sox had lost their closer, and I was talking to my father-in-law about this. And he was saying, hey, you know, he's doing just great. What the heck? You know, I said, I don't know why not winning more, but geez, he comes in. He's fabulous. I said, yeah. I said, let me ask you. He said, who replaced him in the setup role? And he looked at me and he goes, oh. I said, yeah. I said, anytime you make a move and somebody moves up, you need to have the next person up behind them to take their former role. And that's what's happened here. You know, I think Wisconsin's playing great. But down the road, they're going to need to get Jackson back, which they will. And they'll integrate him in increments as they go through this. Frank Kaminsky, what makes Frank Kaminsky the National Player of the Year candidate that he is? He's an impossible guard. He is a 6'10 guy who plays the game like a 6'3 player. He can put the ball on the deck. He can make moves to the bucket. He can post up like a big man. He can step outside and hit threes. He can hit a 15-footer. He can hit a fadeaway. He can roll to the bucket. He can get an offensive rebound. He can do all of those things. And that makes him an impossible guard and why he's been, you know, let's face it, he's going to be the Big Ten Player of the Year, and he has a good chance of being the National Player of the Year. And I know he'll be on my Wooden Award ballot. I'll look right at it, and I'll think to myself, you know, this is a guy I'm probably going to have to take a good, long, hard look at. And he'll be a lottery pick. Now, he won't be the top pick. It's pretty obvious, for example, that Okafor of Duke is going to be the top pick in the draft if he decides to go out, which in all likelihood he will. And we'll talk about that in a few moments. But Kaminsky is going to be one of those guys that will get into the NBA. He'll have a nice 8 to 10 year career should he stay healthy. Will he be an all-star? No, probably not. Maybe once in a while he might be, but probably not. He'll just be a really good, functional, polished NBA player. And you'll get a chance to see him tonight. Sam Dekker, you know, all these guys, you talk about the star system. Almost every guy in the lineup for Wisconsin's a three-star guy. Kaminsky was the three-star guy coming out. The five-star guy is Sam Dekker. And Decker's had a good career, not a great career at Wisconsin. Really, I like him a lot, but I also think he's an X factor. I think Wisconsin's going to actually go as far as Dekker can make difference-making plays to get them past a couple of teams. And Nigel Hayes has really become a better player this year, especially the outside shot. He hits threes now. He hit threes last year. And Josh Gosser is the consummate fifth-year, smart, knows the system, plays it the way Bo wants. And Bo, by the way, has been nominated for the Basketball Hall of Fame, so congratulations to him. And I'll never forget, Wisconsin came in after Joe Paterno passed away. And you know Bo grew up in Chester, and Bo played his high school basketball for Ron Rainey, who played his basketball here at Penn State. Then Ron Rainey took the Wilkes job, and when he did, Bo went to Wilkes and was Ron Rainey's point guard there. So he knows Penn State, Bo Ryan does. And Wisconsin came in right after Joe Paterno passed away, and this is when the statue was still up. He brought his entire team over to the statue. They all signed a hat, a Wisconsin hat, and they laid it there at the statue. It's really a classy, classy thing that I think a lot of people around here have never forgotten. You know, you can see Bo on the sideline. He'll get crazed and so forth. But you know what? You know, you get a chance to really talk to him, meet him, and you realize, you know, what a good guy he is. And that's something I know around here a lot of people will never forget. So Wisconsin will play Penn State tonight. Can Penn State go out against the fifth-ranked team in the country and get it done tonight? We'll find out. Brandon Taylor will play tonight. It looks like DJ Newbill, of course, has had a great year. Has to carry too much of the load in some ways. And other guys have to step up, especially down the stretch. I know a lot of people have been analyzing, what does Penn State do down the stretch, not do down the stretch? And I've had people say, Pat Chambers doesn't do a great job down the stretch. They work on this stuff all the time. So what I decided to do was, instead of just sitting there and delivering an opinion, because it's great to deliver opinions to the masses, I did what I usually do. I decided to put some time in and research some things. So I went back to all the play-by-plays of every close game of the Big Ten that Penn State's had, win or lose, to see what is the difference. Is it not hitting shots or not getting enough shots? Is it missing free throws? Is it turnovers? Is it that the other guy's hitting a lot of shots? Is it the other guy's hitting his free throws? Is the other guy not turning it over? And here's the maddening part of all the research. Let's get to the maddening part of the research, people. There's no rhyme or reason why. Some games, Penn State hits shots. Some games, they don't turn it over. Some games, they do turn it over in the clutch. Some games, they hit free throws. Some games, they miss free throws. Sometimes the other guy hits a bunch of shots. Sometimes the other guy's won, didn't hit any shots. Sometimes the other guy's won and has hit free throws. Sometimes the other guy's won and missed a bunch. Sometimes the other guys turn the ball over, and sometimes they haven't had any turnovers. There's no rhyme or reason, pattern-wise, as to what's derailing them other than a play here or there. Now, how do you eliminate that play or make that play here or there? That's the big question. They're at that maddening stage right now, that stage where you brought it right to the line. Now, can you get over the line and then consistently get over the line? That's where they are now. They've gone from the transitional weed out talent, try to get more talent in here, try to close the gap stage, to now to the point where you've closed the gap, but you can't quite get over the hump. That's where they are right now as a program. And that's the maddening part, the tough part, where you finally get to that stage. So they will play tonight at 7 here at the Jordan Center. Freshman eligibility. We had Sandy Barber on the show yesterday, Penn State's athletic director. We talked about many things, including Patrick Chambers. And she said, look, moving forward, her quote was, Patrick Chambers is my guy. Well, and a lot of people have talked about that and picked up on that from having her on the show yesterday. But we also talked about several other things, and one of them was freshman eligibility. And Kevin's actually the one that brought it up earlier in the week. Maybe Kevin brought it up late last week. It was somewhere in between something about IndyCar and Little League. But he did bring this up. I didn't bring it up. He did. And everything with this, in football, you know, if you get in there in football and freshmen are ineligible, all right, there's a part that makes a little bit of sense there because they get into school, many of them in the last week of June, first week of July, get themselves acclimated in school, then get themselves to training camp and so forth. And it's a rush. And suddenly you're into the fall semester and maybe you're trying to play. All right, I can see that. Basketball is a little different because you're acclimated at that point. You start practice in October. I mean, you're already halfway into the school year by the time you play and get, you know, to practice. And you're deep enough into it where you're just a month away from finals when you start playing. And, of course, if you know, here at Penn State, finals week, Penn State doesn't have a game. So, but basketball is the bigger issue because of not because of the calendar. It's the much bigger issue because of the NBA. And the big issue is the NBA Players Association, without question. They are the big issue in all of this. No question. Big issue. The NBA would like to change the rule from 19 years of age and 1 year in college. See, the 19 part's the people that are, pardon, they never talk about. And to 20 years of age and 2 years. Okay, eh, a little bit better. But the Players Association, no, they don't want to go for the 2 years. And I don't understand that. I thought their job was to protect the current rank and file, the people actually are carrying the cards, as opposed to people who aren't in yet. And what I would like to see is the baseball rule or the football rule. In football, you must be in school or removed from high school 3 years before you can then be eligible for the NFL draft. We saw Jesse James, for example, play at Penn State for 3 years, eligible for the draft, opted for the draft, and he's in the combine coming up this weekend in Indianapolis. Okay. Deion Barnes did not take a fifth year. He opted for the NFL draft. Donovan Smith did not opt for a fifth year. He entered the NFL draft. He's in the combine this weekend. But Barnes and Smith were both here 4 years. James was here three. And that's the rule. Take Jameis Winston. You're saying, well, Jameis Winston's a sophomore. Jameis Winston's a redshirt sophomore. So he redshirted his freshman year, then played 2 years. He was at Florida State 3 years. Well, that's the rule I prefer for basketball. At the age of 18, if you want to go to the NBA draft, I say go ahead. It's your life. Go for it. If you don't make it and you languish in the D-League, you languish in the D-League. You go in there, you make it big. Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, whomever. And if I'm the NBA, I want this. Or, you know, if you have an absolute I am ready LeBron James sitting there, because LeBron James entered the league and LeBron James was really good right away. He's off the charts great now, but he entered the NBA and he was really, really good to start with. Really good. Well, there are some players who are like that. People forget it took Kobe Bryant 2 years. It took Kobe Bryant 2 years before he really finally kicked it into a gear. But LeBron was really good from the jump. So you've got a player like that. So at the age of 18, you want to do it, go. Go. Maybe a kid like Okafor down at Duke looks around and says, hey, you know, I'm going to go. Or Jabari Parker, who was a one and done. If you're 18 and you think you can go and you've got people, and you've got competent people telling you, not emotional people telling you, go ahead and do it. Go ahead. But to me, if you opt to go to college, the three-year rule should apply to basketball as well. That you need to make a three-year commitment. And what we'll do here is we're going to give you a four-year scholarship. Guaranteed four-year scholarship. You commit to us for three. Then after that, make a decision as to whether or not you want to go and you feel you're ready for the pros, or you want to fulfill the whole thing and finish your degree here. Oh, and by the way, if you decide to go to the pros at the end of 3 years, that fourth year will be waiting for you at some point to come back to school and finish your degree. Now, it's easy for the NCAA to propose that. The issue is everything is not dependent on what the NCAA does. It's all dependent on what the NBA wants to do with its collective bargaining agreement. If the NBA is saying you can enter the draft after 1 year, doesn't matter what rule you put in on the college level. This is their baby. Now, if I'm the NBA, I think I'd prefer my proposal. I want a more mature league. I want a more mature league, more polished league. You got great coaches across the country in college basketball at all levels. You know, Herb McGee just won his 1,000th. Okay? I would rather have great coaching and guys coming in the league with some great coaching under the belt to play. All right, bottom of the hour coming up. We'll talk some baseball coming up next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Steve Jones with you here in the Sunbury Motor Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. A little bit later, Kevin will tell you about the beautiful Kia Sorento he's driving right now and how you, too, can buy that vehicle from our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Tonight, Penn State basketball, they get to see the fifth-ranked team in the country tonight, Wisconsin, in the Jordan Center this evening for a 7 o'clock start. Ron beginning at 6:30. I know Kevin, his son, one of his friends, Dave Ritchie, they're going to be going to the game tonight. In fact, they'll have an autograph table set up outside of Section 103, so they'll be signing throughout the game this evening. All right, baseball. Charlie Wilmuth joined us yesterday from BucksDugout.com to talk about the Pirates. Todd Zielecki now to come in and talk a little bit about the Phillies and make us feel better in this freezing cold weather. Hi, Todd.
Yeah, the warm weather is coming, I hope. Not today or tomorrow, but hopefully very, very soon.
Todd, people make moves in the offseason. How would you outline what the Phillies did?
It's a step in the right direction, but they have so much work to do. You know, essentially what they've done is they've traded three players for four minor league pitchers. And, right. You know, you talk about rebuilding a franchise and starting from scratch and not winning again until 2017, 2018. Those aren't my words. Those are Pat Gillick's words. You're going to need a heck of a lot more than four minor league pitchers. So it's a step in the right direction. It's acknowledgement, long overdue acknowledgement, that this team wasn't good enough to win. And, you know, the kind of these last-ditch efforts to win were kind of ill-conceived plans, I guess. And so it's good to see them finally acknowledging the fact that they need to start over. And, you know, but like I just said, they have so much work, more work to be done. It's almost kind of like a barely a ripple in the pond.
they spent so much money on a few players. They really went all in on a core group, and it turned out that several of them ended up getting hurt. That's the part you can't count on. Did it set back the overall franchise financially because they poured so much into them that they couldn't fit in the right parts around them for the right numbers?
Yeah, to an extent. You know, you only have so much money to spend, and I know there's no luxury or salary cap in baseball, but the Phillies are a team that they've been top five in payroll in baseball for the last several seasons, but they don't want to go over that luxury tax threshold, so it's kind of a self-imposed budget. And, you know, when you commit $25 million to Ryan Howard, $13 to Jonathan Papelbon, $24 to Cliff Lee, and all these other guys, and they underperform or are injured. Roy Halladay's last season and a half, he was injured and ineffective. You're out of luck. You're just basically out of luck because you can't then go out and buy another $25 million player to replace Ryan Howard. I mean, that money's already been committed. And so the way they have spent money and the amount of money they have spent into certain players has really kind of backfired on them.
In 2005, the top 10 prospects in the Red Sox organization were John Lester, Dustin Pedroia, Jacoby Ellsbury, Jonathan Papelbon. The other four or five were mostly major league contributors as well. That's how they built their 7 and 13 championships in some ways with that core group of guys. What is the state of the Phillies minor league system on this day?
Well, it's not in great shape. You know, the Phillies, of course, will say that, you know, it's a lot better than people give them credit for. But the fact of the matter remains that their drafts have not been very good over the last 10 years. I looked into it last summer, right before the last draft, and found that in the last 10 years, I think the Phillies they ranked 7th out of 30 teams in terms of drafted players that have reached the big leagues, which sounds good. Okay. But then when you look at some of these modern metrics, wins above replacement, those types of things, whether or not you agree with them or not, is a way to measure how impactful a guy has been in the big leagues. The Phillies were dead last, and dead last by a lot. So you look at their last 10 years' worth of drafts, and their most productive players at this point are Dominic Brown, Vance Worley, Jay Happ. I mean, guys that aren't really going to take an organization to the next level, and that's kind of why that's one reason why they fired Marty Wolver, their amateur scouting director, at the end of last season, and it kind of just shows why they are where they are. You know, in the past, it was a situation where, hey, should we trade Jim Thome, potential future Hall of Famer, because we've got a stud Ryan Howard coming up through this system? You know, should we trade Placido Polanco, an all-star caliber, gold glove caliber second baseman, because we have Chase Utley coming up through the system? Those are legitimate problems that they had back in the day. And now it's like, do you bench Ryan Howard for who? You know, Darren Ruff? You know, they don't really have guys that can play, replace guys. They're going to have Freddy Galvis be their everyday shortstop this season, a guy who hasn't proved that he can even hit big league pitching. So it's really just a big problem from top to bottom.
And not only that, but some of those major leaguers that have made it to the majors on that number 7 list would include some of the guys they dealt to the Astros that are now up in the major leagues in the Hunter Pence trade.
Absolutely, that's another aspect of it. They've traded away a lot of their depth to kind of go for it. And, you know, looking back on it, you know, I still think if you have an opportunity to go for it, you go for it. And they went for it, and they fell short. So I don't necessarily fault them so much about trading away some of their prospects for a guy like Hunter Pence, or, you know, trading away prospects for Roy Halladay, because if you feel like you have an opportunity, you should try to go for it because that window is closed. Right. But if you do shoot and miss, you know, it just kind of compounds the problem.
I am in total agreement with that. And I've said that the entire time. The opportunity to win is actually few and far between, contrary to what people believe. And I would have made the Pence trade. I would have made the Halladay trade. That's not the issue. To me, the issue is when they do the reverse and they deal a veteran for prospects. That's when I think they stumble.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the Cliff Lee trade from 2009. You know, they trade for Roy Halladay, then the same day they trade Cliff Lee to the Mariners. That trade was a very bad trade. They rushed into it. They didn't give enough talent in return, and that's why I think when it comes to Cole Hamels, a guy that they're thinking about trading right now, they are going to definitely ask for almost a can't miss. Now, no prospect is can't miss, but as close to a can't miss guy as you can possibly get, because if they trade Cole Hamels and get three duds like they got for Cliff Lee in 2009, that could really set the organization back further. They really have to hit on that, and that's why I think that they are kind of remaining very staunch in their stance in terms of what they get in return for him. They're not just going to give away Cole Hamels or go, you know, we really kind of don't like this guy. We're not in love with this prospect, but it seems to be the best we can do, so let's just go ahead and do it. I think they're just going to hold on to him until somebody finally gives them what they want.
And I felt the Pence trade set them back as well when they dealt him to the Giants and what they got in return for that one.
Yeah, you look at the Pence trade to the Giants. You look at the Victorino trade to the Dodgers. You know, you look at a lot of these trades that they've made, veterans going for prospects. They have not really had a single guy so far kind of step up. You know, you trade a Michael Young or guys like that, you're not really going to get much in return. Even Jim Thome, when they traded him to the Orioles a couple years ago, he's at the end of his career. You're not going to get a stud prospect. But you'd like to think that you might get lucky with one of these guys. And so far to this point, they haven't had one guy really hit, and you go, wow, that turns out to be a really great trade for him.
What's your feel for Ryan Sandberg as a manager in the major league level? Do you like the feel that he has for the game, the feel he has for the clubhouse? What's your sense after a year?
I definitely think that he's got a lot of work to do, and he kind of said as much last week. He needs to communicate better with his players. There really was a lack of communication in the clubhouse last year. He didn't really handle certain situations well. You know, he benched Jimmy Rollins in spring training kind of out of the blue. He benched Ryan Howard and basically said, hey, you know, I'm here to win games, and basically kind of said some things publicly and behind the scenes, and handled some things publicly and behind the scenes that didn't really sit well with some veterans. And like it or not, being a manager in baseball these days is a lot about just kind of handling people and relating to people, and he didn't really show a knack for that last year. And I think that's going to be something he really needs to work on this year. He needs to kind of be in the clubhouse more, talk to players more, assert himself more. And that's why he said as much last week, that things kind of got away in the clubhouse and there was a lack of leadership in the clubhouse. And he finally acknowledged that, you know, he was kind of part of the problem and that he was not really anywhere to be found, and kind of let the clubhouse run itself, which is a big mistake.
All right, there's going to be a process for them to get back into the thick of this thing. Right now, Philly fans are sitting back and saying, okay, what, they got Doug Fister 1 year and they get Max Scherzer the next year, that's in our division, you know, I mean, things like that. How long could this process take? Because you've watched other teams go through it, but they are also in a process where they have money.
Yeah, so they could speed it up. Pat Gillick's a very smart guy, and he very memorably said it last fall, the Phillies are not going to contend again until 2017, maybe 2018. I think he's trying to lower expectations because he doesn't think the team is going to be good this year. But if some of these trades that they make, some of these guys work out, if some of their current draft picks, Aaron Nola was a first-round draft pick last year. They love the guy. A lot of people say he could be in the big leagues as early as this year. J.P. Crawford was the first-round draft pick 2 years ago. He could be in the big leagues, you know, next year, a year after that. If a lot of these guys kind of continue to improve and progress like the Phillies want, if they can make a couple more good trades, Papelbon, Hamels, Howard, whatever, and get some other good prospects, it could be sooner than expected or sooner than Gillick has said because of what you just mentioned. They do have money to spend. So now if they see some prospects and some of these younger players continuing to develop this year and they see some positive signs, then maybe next offseason they go, you know, maybe we sign a key free agent or two and try to retool and get ready for 2016 or 2017. So maybe it's not as far out as Pat Gillick has said, but they definitely need a lot of things to kind of go right, which have not gone right over the past few years.
you've mentioned Pat Gillick's name several times during the course of our conversation, Todd. The confidence that he brings to an organization when he is actually the one calling the shots.
It's big, and it should be big. The guy's in the Hall of Fame for a reason. Very few GMs in the Hall of Fame, and he's one of them. Everywhere he's gone, he's taken teams to the postseason. He's never really done a rebuilding project before, but he has built organizations from scratch before. And I really think Pat Gillick has been a huge influence in this offseason. As soon as he took over, all of a sudden the talk of the organization went from, we're going to try to be competitive, we've invested a lot of money in these guys, we're going to try to win, Phillies fans deserve a winner. And Pat Gillick just came out and said, we need to start over and start from scratch, which is the right thing to do. So the fact that he's kind of calling the shots right now, he's interim president, I think bodes well for the Phillies and for Phillies fans, because he knows what he's doing. He's not nostalgic towards players. Jimmy Rollins got traded. I don't know if Jimmy Rollins would have been traded if David Montgomery were still in control. So I think those things bode well for the Phillies.
Todd, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. And we look forward to having you back on again to talk more about the Philadelphia Phillies. By the way, we're going to start also our spring training series every Wednesday. We're going to go down and talk to one of the announcers down at spring training dealing with the Pirates. We're also going to try and do a couple things with the Phillies as well to keep everybody up to date on what's going on at spring training. Because, yes, pitchers and catchers do report this week. For Phillies fans, this is a long road. There's no question. But they're doing the right thing. They do have to start over. And I know one thing the Pirate fans did not want to hear when the new ownership group came in and they changed things up and they said, look, we need to start over. And the Pirate fans are looking around saying, we've started over for 15, 16 years. But if you do it right, then it works out. And the Phillies are in that precarious spot where you have an injured veteran that's $25 million salary that you really can't get rid of in Ryan Howard. Chase Utley has been a marvelous player when he's played. The key is the part when he's played. Cole Hamels has done some great things for them. Chucho Ruiz has done good things for them. But I like the fact, the one thing he talked about, and this is why Kevin Herr could never be a general manager. Okay, this is why Kevin Herr, as much as he loves sports, could not be a general manager, was the statement Todd made about Pat Gillick not being sentimental toward players. He says he dealt Jimmy Rollins. He said, I don't think David Montgomery would have done that. And that's Kevin's issue. And I understand that. He gets loyalty to a guy, and for him, it just galls him. It would gall him if he ever saw Troy Polamalu, for example, suddenly show up and be a Cincinnati Bengal, just the way Rod Woodson did by playing for the Ravens. Unfortunately in sports today, you have to have the opposite of big heart Kevin Herr. Because Kevin does have a big heart, and he does get attached to players who have contributed mightily to his teams. Unfortunately, the model is the Bill Belichick, thanks for everything, appreciate it, good luck, we're going with somebody else. And unfortunately, that is the way it is now. Players used to play at the same spot their entire career. Cal Ripken Jr., Carl Yastrzemski, Ted Williams, Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio, played their entire careers in one spot. It's a rarity now. Derek Jeter, obviously. Jeter, Posada, played their entire careers one spot. Tom Brady, I'm not sure Tom Brady finishes as a New England Patriot. I'm not sure he does. He claims he wants to play until he's into his early 40s. Well, if they see a fall off and it's not going to help them, Yeah. They could part ways. Brady's father even said, I don't see it ending well because Tom Brady wants to keep playing. And as much as he is meant to Bill Belichick, Belichick, his job is to put the best team out there and win. If he doesn't think it's part of the best team at the age now, what's Brady now, 37, 38? Say Brady's 41 years old. And say he's still good, but not great. And the Patriots are an 8-8 team, and they think Jimmy Garoppolo's ready. Whatever scenario you want. They'll go with Garoppolo. They've already proven it over and over again. And unfortunately in sports, being sentimental gets you to a point, but then at some point, especially with salary caps and the business side of it, it's still a business. You hate to think of it that way. It certainly takes away from the romanticization of sports. You'd like to see, you know, your favorite players stay there and then end their career and go out with the big ceremony at the stadium or the ballpark or the arena and bid adios and thanks so much for all the great things that you did. You'd love to see that. But 9 times out of 10, that's not how it ends. Because it's a business on both ends. Said player wants to keep playing. Your cap number's huge. They can't keep you, but you want to keep playing. So, like Brian Dawkins, you end up with the Denver Broncos. Peyton Manning. Denver Broncos. After everything he did for Indianapolis. Baseball, same way. Get to a certain point. Big contract, go someplace else. Some Philly fans are saying, when's Ryan Howard contract up? Doesn't appear to be any sentimental feel there. All right. Next hour, we'll talk more. We'll even let Kevin a good 60 seconds on racing. Daytona 500, of course, coming up this weekend, which is the jump start to the racing season. Gets things rolling. IndyCar had an event in Brazil, didn't they? Got canceled. Not a good start. All right, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, coming up to the top of the hour. News next, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.